NetSuite by Oracle brings accounting, finance, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce costs everywhere. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/wallstreet.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
The 2020 election could still swing either way, parsing the early returns and where things might go from here. Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal, sitting in today for Paul Jacot. We're joined today, as usual, by my colleagues, Kim Strassel. Hi, Kim.
Hi, Kyle.
And Bill McGurn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Kyle.
So let's start with the presidential results, where things stand right now. We're taping in the early afternoon, the day after the election. And as things stand right now, the numbers I'm looking at, Joe Biden is up by a few tens of thousands of votes in Michigan and Wisconsin, which could be decisive states. About a fifth of the vote in Pennsylvania is still outstanding. There's very slow counting going on there. There's some disputes about what's happening in Arizona. So, Kim, as you look at the map, how do you read where it stands right now?
Well, here's the states that have not been, are in dispute, I would say. So Georgia and North Carolina. And people I talk to, the president still holds pretty sizable leads in those, or respectable leads, I should say. They're not entirely done reporting, and Democrats are holding out hope. But I would argue that it's pretty likely the president keeps both of those states. In Wisconsin and Michigan, the vice president, former Vice President Biden, holds narrow margins in Wisconsin by about 20,000 votes, in Michigan by about 30,000 votes. It sounds as though even the Trump campaign is not really disputing the likelihood, or not suggesting the likelihood of winning Wisconsin, because even when there are recounts, they don't tend to result in much. But then if you listen to the Trump team, here's where things get interesting. A lot of networks, or rather two networks, Fox News and AP, last night called Arizona for Vice President Biden. The Trump campaign is strongly disputing this, and I think they've got an argument, because if you look at things on the ground, there are still a number of counties that Trump is winning substantially that are still counting votes. They've got precincts outstanding. And then you look at Maricopa County, where they're done with the mail-in vote, they're done with the absentee count, and they're doing the election day count, where Donald Trump was winning very strongly. And that's why you saw Joe Biden's lead there fall by 50,000 votes over the night. He's still leading by about 90, but there's more than a half a million votes outstanding, so they're arguing that. And then, of course, Pennsylvania, where, as you said, there's still a lot of the vote not counted. Donald Trump still has a pretty impressive lead. And I think we're going to end up, as Kyle, you have been predicting forever and ever, this one could go to the courts.
Well, the reversal of the Arizona call, if that happens, I mean, networks have had to retract calls before in the past. That's not unheard of. But that would be huge, because as Kim says, I mean, that is, as I do the math here on the Electoral College, that means that it would essentially come down to Pennsylvania, where there's still a lot unknown. Just to do some review again, I mean, Pennsylvania, there was a court ruling that said ballots could, if they're mailed on time or if they don't have postmarks, they can arrive by 3 days after the election. So there's still ballots that are valid ballots that are coming in, that are arriving at election offices today, tomorrow in Pennsylvania. And if it's really close, Bill, and Pennsylvania is the swing state. I mean, it could be a really huge legal fight.
Yeah, I think you predicted that. I mean, are we surprised? Are we shocked that these things are going to be ended up decided in the courts after the states made all these changes, as you've written about? Pennsylvania is really interesting for that, because my understanding was that the decision upholding the state court was just a decline to put a stay on the move, right? And they could revisit it. And in the meantime, the court has changed with Amy Comey Barrett. So it gets very, very complicated. I'm actually fairly confident that in the end, the court will do the right thing to the degree that it can. But I think we all agree this is a terrible way for elections to end up, because it just increases bitterness of whoever is the loser, right? And it feeds accusations of cheating and so forth. We shouldn't want this as the norm for our politics, where we don't get a result and we have to wait a couple of days. And I will say it troubles me that most of these states where there are these problems and recounts are Democratic states. And we saw that in the primaries. Why can't they get their act together and set clear rules and have things counted? It just boggles the mind.
Yeah, so the recollection you had of that Pennsylvania ruling was correct. So the Secretary of State there had advised local officials to set aside any late ballots. They can be counted, but they have to be kept separate in case they're invalidated. But as we stand here looking at a map that is not what we expected yesterday, reading the polling, I mean, Kim, I guess one big question is, What did the pollsters miss? This was not the blue wave that we were told was going to be approaching.
Yes, we did get one definitive outright loser last night, and that was much of the polling establishment. And it's really astonishing. My favorite one is Ohio, where the president won by about 8 percentage points. And yet you had pollsters in the days running up to Ohio suggesting that Joe Biden was going to win it by 4 points, 5 points. That's a 13-point gap. Look at Florida again, where everyone was predicting a Biden win. It goes on and on. Texas, remember that supposedly the Texas wave, well, the president won that by 6 points as well, too. So there's a lot for people to account for. I would point out that there are some pollsters, ones that were getting ridiculed, groups like Trafalgar, groups like Rasmussen, groups like Susquehanna, that look as though they were much closer in the end. They didn't get it exactly right either, but I think that they're going to be able to hold their heads up a much higher. And I think that, you know what this is? It's a disconnect between these establishment pollster guys who sit in there, you know, their ivory towers. They don't go out and meet Americans. They're still using old methods, despite the knowledge that they know that there are a lot of conservative voters that are reluctant to talk to pollsters. So they're missing a significant part of that vote. I don't know how they ever get their credibility back, but they're going to have to do some major changes to even begin to attempt that project.
And another notable outcome as we're looking through some of these results is that, Florida is a state where the polling has been wrong several times now consistently. But one thing that's notable here is that Trump, Bill, seems to be doing much better among Hispanic voters in Florida, particularly than the pollsters had thought was possible.
Yeah. I mean, back to your first point on this, or with Kim, with the polls, the mainstream polls that tend to be attached to the big media outlets, you know, whether it's a network or a newspaper, you know, they have a different methodology. And I interviewed one of those other more independent pollsters that Kim was talking about, and they were dismissing the polls. You know, I think there was an ABC poll about 10 days ago that had Trump behind 17 points in Wisconsin. And they were dismissing him. They said, look, it's going to be a close race. You know, whoever wins, it's going to be a close race. And these polls with these 7 and 9 point gaps are just way, way off. And they believe that the reason they're way, way off is because their methodology misses Trump voters. And some of those voters are like the voters you just said, the Latinos and so forth. The polls didn't pick up that support for Trump from this area. And it's really quite extraordinary, because what we have the day after the election, whether Donald Trump wins or loses, he's greatly increased the Republican appeal in with Latinos and with African Americans. In fact, I read one thing saying that in basically every demographic, he's improved except with white men, which dips slightly, which is odd for a guy we've been told for 4 years is a white supremacist.
Hang tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. So, Kim, I mean, if that holds up, that Trump has done better among Hispanic voters, among African-American voters, this is something that party leaders have been telling the GOP it needs to do for a long time now. What would you attribute that result to?
A lot of hard work. And look, I think credit where it is due. And you know, it was overdue. But think back to that Republican convention this summer and look at the wide array of faces and all the diversity that was up there on that stage. This, in my adult life covering elections, this is the first time I saw a Republican campaign, a Republican party, not just sort of, you know, do the occasional event and have the occasional, you know, outreach to this or that Latino group, but was featuring their folks in the party, was asking the minority vote to give them a look and doing it on a sustained day-to-day basis. And it's clearly paid off. And I think that one of the things that we may not know the results of this election yet at a presidential level. What we do know, though, is that this is still a closely and deeply divided nation, but one in which there are shifts within the party as to who it represents. And, you know, I think Republicans walk out this and can make the argument that they are now the party that represents a far more, an increasingly diverse working class America versus a Democratic Party that is increasingly the party of a gentrified left.
And Bill, do you think the voters should be concerned about the shifts in some of these states as ballots continue to be counted? I mean, some of this was expected given the polling that suggested Biden supporters were much more likely to vote by mail and right. Trump supporters were much more likely to vote in person. But if we get into day two or three of counting, I mean, do you think that should worry the average citizens?
Well, I'm not sure it should worry. It depends what they find. I mean, there may be explanations for these things, but right there's there's these screenshots of vote counts in Michigan, and something like 138,000 votes appeared for Joe Biden and none for Trump. There might be a perfectly good explanation for that, but I'd like to see it. The more factors, the more variables you introduce, one, there are more opportunities for cheating, and two, there's just more. There's more opportunities for people to feel something's not right. And I think we've really gotten away from, you know, from an emphasis on clear rules followed on the day of election day to get a clear result. And anything short of that, I think just inflames people and creates clouds of illegitimacy over a president. Look, I worked for President George W. Bush, and he spent a long time. I don't think he did anything wrong. I think he was the clear winner in 2000, but it was used to delegitimize his presidency. And whoever wins, whether it's a Democrat or a Republican, you don't want the other half of the country thinking the election was stolen from you. That's just a recipe for further division and trouble.
I mean, I guess to my mind, the perception is more worrying than the reality. Yeah. I mean, this counting is done in a bipartisan fashion. Generally, it's done by local officials out of national party control, and you know, it would be hard to you know, conjure up more than a handful of ballots. I mean, if the margin in some of these states ends up being 10 or 20 or 30,000. But I don't think that President Trump is helping the situation. I mean, here's his tweet early this AM. He says, "We're up big, but they're trying to steal this election. We will never let them do it. Votes cannot be cast after the polls are closed." Kim, what do you make of a tweet like that?
Well, look, I think the president needs to make a distinction between the desire that everyone should have, that all legally cast ballots that are in line with state election law are counted, and then efforts to instead widen the field to include ballots that fall afoul of that election law and to do it entirely to swing a result one way or the other. And that is clearly what the Republicans are worried about here. I agree with you. It's very difficult given the way the counting works and oversight to for anyone to magic up 100,000 votes somewhere. But what we have seen happen in the past, and I have covered races where this has happened, is the lawyers come in, or the race is close, and the lawyer says, yeah, well, you know, these votes actually all arrived after the deadline, but we don't want to disenfranchise anybody, so we should include this tranche of ballots. And, you know, I think that that's one of the worries of the Trump campaign at this point. And so, you know, watch them be on guard on that. But I do think that it would be useful. Look, there's a potentiality here for a lot of people to go out on the streets, people to just lose all faith in the integrity of this election. Both sides, all sides need to watch what they say.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I do think that after this is all settled, I wonder if there's going to be any push to fix some of these issues with these election laws. I mean, there's a question after the pandemic recedes whether this mail voting experiment that we've kind of been doing is going to stay. But some of it, Bill, is even more basic. I mean, the late counting in a state like Wisconsin or a state like Pennsylvania is due in part to the fact that state law says you can't start pre-processing the stacked up absentee ballots until election day. And that could be a bipartisan change. Give election officials, you know, some days in advance to deal with those before election day arrives.
Right. I mean, again, on the Pennsylvania case, because that did reach the Supreme Court, it looks to me that if there's any question about Pennsylvania, it looks like it might all come down to Pennsylvania. If there's any question, it's going to be litigated. It's going to go to the Supreme Court, and it's going to be complicated because of all those rules, you know, regarding where does the federal authority begin and end and so forth. And so we may get changes, and then maybe there's legislative changes, but it will be a big tussle between federal and state authorities. I mean, the general ruling is, you know, the federal government kind of gets to set the general rules, you know, what you can do, and the state's legislatures are assigned the role of the how we're going to do it in our state. And we'll see if this is changed. I would hope that if it is changed, it is changed through the legislatures again, and not just ordered by the courts. But I think by the court punting on that in the stay, they've invited a far stickier case. You know, they don't want to be involved in politics. It's going to be inevitable, and it's going to be for higher stakes when they do. So I do see just a mess ahead.
Moving on to look at some of the Senate races, if you assume that Joe Biden has a wider path to the White House at this point, which looks the case to me, then as we have discussed previously, I mean, a lot of what the next 2 years will look like depends on whether Republicans keep or lose the Senate. And Kim, I don't think they were favored to keep it by the pollsters, but how are things looking right now?
Yeah, if you are Mitch McConnell, you are, I think, feeling pretty confident, mostly because Mitch McConnell won his race by a stunning margin. And don't forget that just a month ago, we were being warned by all those pollsters and Democrats that Republicans were in so much trouble that McConnell's seat was at risk. Lindsey Graham's seat in South Carolina was at risk. John Cornyn's seat in Texas was at risk. None of that was the case. They all won decisively. But in addition to that, it looks as though the bad news for Republicans is that Cory Gardner in Colorado definitely lost. I would note that it looks as though he overperformed how the president did in the state, but that state has simply just gone so blue at this point that it's very tough for a Republican, and that's pretty clear. Democrats, or rather, I should say the media, have called Arizona for Mark Kelly, who and saying that Martha McSally, the Republican, is lost. She is disputing that. We will see if those vote totals change at all as they continue to do that vote and numbers change, just as the president's campaign is hoping. But on the good news on Republicans, they picked up that seat in Alabama. Tommy Tuberville won against Doug Jones. Joni Ernst in Iowa won a pretty definite victory. Tom Tillis in North Carolina is claiming victory, and the numbers so far seem to hold him with that. Steve Daines in Montana won. And then it looks as though in Georgia, you will at best have Perdue winning outright, at worst going to a special and or a runoff, and same with the other Georgia seat. So where this stands at the moment is basically Republicans are one down. And I forgot Maine's Susan Collins, who is currently notching a pretty impressive victory, but where there are still votes discounted. So the point is they're about one down than where they were. And they'd have to have a really bad run to end up losing the Senate. I don't see how they do that.
So the upshot here, Bill, may be that if President Biden goes into the White House, nobody for at least 2 years will have to care what he thinks about court packing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Mitch McConnell is the master of using his powers in the Senate, especially when his party is out of the White House. And it could frustrate a lot of things. I mean, Nancy Pelosi always talks about the Senate as the place that Democratic legislation goes to die. So, you know, the worst case I think Republicans were facing was for Trump to lose, Democrats to keep the House, and to then retake the Senate. And then they could run the table. But a Republican Senate, even with the thin majority, if Mitch McConnell is the majority leader, it changes a lot. He will be able to block a lot. Look, the Senate's job, it's basically designed to be a check to block things in many ways. So that means, as usual in American politics, we haven't got one or the other extreme. We've got some kind of messy thing in the middle. And that's going to be an interesting dynamic. You know, I noticed on the House side also, the Republicans have done better. We may pick up 10 seats, I think. I noticed that one of the bellwether races, Connor Lamb in Pennsylvania, who is the poster boy for Democratic moderates, looks like he's behind Sean Parnell, the Republican in Western PA. It seems to me that one of the biggest casualties of this may be any moderate Democrats. I think the left is feeling very ascendant, and they may not win majorities, but I think in their party, they'll win, and they may squeeze out. They may make it harder for a Democratic president by squeezing out the more moderate members in the House and Senate.
And then one side note, Kim, on a couple of those resounding victories that you mentioned by Lindsey Graham in South Carolina, Mitch McConnell. One thing that's interesting to note is that the Democratic candidates in those states spent a ton of money. I mean, perhaps Democratic donors were deceived by the polls into thinking that that those were competitive, but it certainly looks like not a good use of those campaign funds in retrospect.
Yeah, expect a lot of finger pointing among Democrats on that. And I think that this is one of the casualties of that polling establishment that got so many things wrong. And maybe Democrats should sue. But look, I mean, Michael Bloomberg poured $100 million into Florida to beat Donald Trump. And, you know, what Trump won by more than 3%. There was $75 million in Kentucky spent to try to get Amy McGrath elected. And Mitch McConnell, the last time I was looking, won by 20 points. You know, the money that went into Texas, the money that went into South Carolina to defeat Lindsey Graham. And I'm sure there's going to be more examples of this. I mean, one of the under-noted aspects of this, well, you won't hear the media talking about this, but, you know, Democrats had no complaints this year about the amount of money that was being spent in election. This is normally one of their hobby horses, you know, the evilness of money. Well, this cycle, they happen to have a lot of it, and they threw it in. And I would like to make the point that, you know, this is yet more evidence that money, in my mind, is political speech. It should be allowed. but you can't necessarily sell or buy an election. You know, you can get that speech out, but if the voters aren't buying what you're selling, then it doesn't matter how much money you throw at it. And, you know, we'll get a tally at some point about how much was put into this, but there was definitely some very bad investments by Democrats this time around.
And I guess one thought I would add to that is the total amount of money the Open Secrets website was projecting that it was going to hit, total election spending in 2020 was going to hit something like $11 billion, which sounds like a lot. But if you go look for some comparisons, that's like what Americans spend on sports drinks in a year or mobile video games, which doesn't seem all that wild for picking all of Congress, all of the House, excuse me, a third of the Senate and the president. Finally, we mentioned a few state referendums yesterday and just thought it might be good to give people an update. I'll start the Colorado National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. It has not been called yet, but it looks like that is that Colorado is going to stay in the compact. So all the people who are griping, who wish we weren't talking about the Electoral College right now, are one step closer to trying to do away with it, though it still has a long way to go. Bill, remind me, which ones were you keeping an eye on?
Well, I was mostly looking at California's Proposition 16, which was designed to restore affirmative action and race-based preferences in decisions about admissions to public colleges, public contracts, and public jobs. And it's striking. You know, this thing passed in 1996, and the numbers now, and they may change, but I think only slightly, show that even as California has become more blue and more racially diverse, it rejected these racial preferences by a bigger majority, a bigger margin than they did in 1996 when it went out there. So I think this is a big blow against identity politics, because it means what was the margin against Donald Trump? I mean, this is not Republican territory. Republicans and, say, Asians couldn't defeat this. It had to have a lot of Democrats and liberals secretly supporting it.
I was in particular watching the ranked choice voting ballot initiatives that were up in Massachusetts and in Alaska, which would have changed around the traditional methods that we vote by, in which, you know, the person with the most vote wins on the first ballot, and replaced it with a much more confusing grid-like system in which basically computers do a lot of the analysis in the end. And it results in usually lower turnout and sometimes some pretty hinky results. So those appear to have lost in both Massachusetts and Alaska. So I think that's a victory for voters out there.
All right. Thank you, Kim and Bill. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back later this week with another edition of Potomac Watch.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.